Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Have you ever heard yourself saying to your partner, or maybe your partner has said it to you, "You make me so mad," or "You hurt my feelings"? Well, now I want you to hold yourself together, because no, they didn't make you that way. Yes, you didn't like what they did, you didn't like their behavior, you didn't like what they said, but how you react to it is on you, not on them. And it's like, okay guys, I know, it took me a really long time to grasp this concept too. A colleague of mine named Terry Real has talked about that you get to choose how you feel. You get to choose your emotion. And I'm going, no, you don't. And then all of a sudden it was like, actually, you do. What we can't control is the trigger, but we do get to choose our emotions once we're triggered. And once I got it, once I actually embraced that, it made all the difference in my life and my relationships. And in reality, it can make all the difference in yours too, if you're willing to learn the productive things to do when you get flooded. So I'm joined today by authors and relationship coaches, Dr. Ruth Schwartz and Dr. Michelle Moraine, to walk you through one way to end the destruction in your relationship once and for all. So Ruth and Michelle, thank you so much for coming on and being willing to share your expertise with me and the listeners.
You're so welcome. It's so great to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Leslie. Thank you for everything that you're doing to help people improve their communication, and we're excited to get the chance to talk with you and your listeners.
Well, because, you know, I know that you guys have heard this. I've heard this, you know, this oft-stated comment by relationship professionals that all couples, even happy ones, fight, and that if they actually don't fight, then they're repressing things. So what's your guys' take on that?
Well, I would say that all couples have conflict come up.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a choice about how we deal with that conflict. And we believe that there are ways that are much healthier and more productive to deal with that conflict that absolutely do not involve repressing it or stuffing it, but also don't involve fighting.
In fact, fighting is really an intimacy-killing activity. When you're in that mode of fighting, you're actually tearing down your intimacy between each other.
Right, and I tell people that no matter how many times you apologize for something that you said or did in anger, your partner can never unexperience it. They will have those words bouncing around in their brain forever. And the more conflict and fighting and harsh words there are, the more those words are bouncing around. And it, you know, and I don't know anybody who feels good after a fight. I mean, maybe makeup sex is great. But I don't think it replaces or removes the damage that was done.
In fact, the brain has a negativity bias, and what that means is that negative experiences have actually five times the power
mm-hmm.
than ones do. So an apology might be, you know, one positive, but that doesn't counteract the five negative points that you got speaking out of anger.
And so, right, so you're always kind of functioning at a deficit if you tend to fight a lot.
Right,
exactly.
Right. You're always withdrawing the money from the emotional relationship bank account and not depositing enough back in, and so you end up broke or broken up.
Yeah, I mean, because that's one of the things that people come to me about, you know, is that they don't communicate well, they don't know how to resolve differences. I'm not a big fan of the word conflict, because that's always a negative connotation to that. I mean, I talk about people disagreeing, because there's no way that two people are going to agree on everything, no matter how well suited they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's And it's how we address those differences with our partners. And unfortunately, I think most people do it rather poorly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because we as a culture haven't trained ourselves and trained each other. We haven't trained kids to learn how to do it differently. And so I wish that the kind of conflict healing skills, we call it conflict healing. It sounds like mm-hmm. you have a different way of framing it. I think we're talking about the same kinds of things, the same kinds of really healthy communication skills that you can learn to use that avoid fights, avoid mm-hmm. all that pain, avoid the negative spirals. You know, I wish that they were teaching that stuff to us in high school. You know, that's when we, if we had gotten to learn all these things in high school, just think of all the pain we would have been spared and the pain we would have spared other people.
Well, exactly. You know, because I remember, you know, and it's not just our partners, because I remember very distinctly my daughter and I having a set to. And I sent her to her room, and when she came down, she said to me, "Mommy, I'm so sorry I made you mad." And I said, "Stop right there." I said, "Yes, what you did was not okay, but how I handled it was not okay either. You did not make me mad." And she's standing there looking at me like, you know, because I want her to learn this. I want her to learn, one, that moms can apologize and moms aren't always in control, but also that, no, I own my own stuff. She doesn't own it, no matter what it was she did that I didn't like.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And it's so powerful, you know, as you were describing, when you really, it clicked in for you, what your mentor was teaching, and it made all the difference. You know, I know that I certainly had those moments in my life as well, and I know Michelle has. And when we're teaching people, we sometimes see that light bulb go on. And when you really get that you own your own stuff, I think people are often afraid to own their own stuff because they think, well, if it's not somebody else's fault, you know, then I'm just stuck with it. But the truth is, when you realize that your feelings are your responsibility and you can work with them yourself, it's so empowering,
mm-hmm.
liberating.
And there's the other side of it, too, because some of us actually take on other people's feelings. And
mm-hmm.
the other part of it is that we can relinquish responsibility for other people's feelings to them. And so we can let go of that, which is also very empowering.
Absolutely. So the two of you promote a conflict healing method called SCORE, and that's S-C-O-R-E, and that stands for something. So what is this method, and what does SCORE mean?
So just a little bit of a step back. When people get triggered, when they have very strong emotions, they're activating a certain part of their brains called the amygdala.
It's, mm-hmm.
it's really the part of our brain that's responsible for the process of keeping us alive as human beings. And it's the fight or flight response. And what happens when we're triggered is that our amygdala does something called the amygdala hijack. It actually takes the traffic away from our prefrontal cortex, which means we literally cannot think and
right.
not speak skillfully. And so the SCORE process is a process of helping people get out of that amygdala hijack to the point where they can, in fact, speak skillfully.
And it's a
okay.
that we developed ourselves, which we're very proud of. And what we based it on is Michelle's background in neuroscience. She has a PhD in neuroscience, and I have a PhD in transpersonal psychology. And we both have studied and practiced a lot of different spiritual practices over the years. Michelle has a long Buddhist practice. So we like to say that SCORE combines science, psychology, and spirit.
Uh-huh.
It's evidence-based medicine, and essentially it's a five-step process that we teach to, as Michelle said, help people get out of the triggered state and get into a place where they can make conscious, skillful choices about how and what and when to communicate. And if you'd like us to go through each of those five steps, we can
yes, please.
Happily do that. Okay, so step one, the S, is for step back into yourself. And what that means is usually when we get triggered, you know, which can be by something somebody else says or does or doesn't do, or even just something we're remembering from the past, as soon as we notice those physiological signs of emotion, you know, the heart's beating harder or the breath is more shallow, or, you know, just we're feeling sad or angry or scared, as soon as you notice that, what we teach as the first step is take some breaths and step back into yourself so that you stop thinking about whatever it was that that person did or said or didn't do or didn't say, and you just come right back into yourself, into your own physical body and sensations. That's step one.
Right. I tell people that, you know, breathing is underrated, that sometimes if we just stop and take deep breaths and focus on our breathing, that that's a really good step to avoid all kinds of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. And so the second step, the C of SCORE, is to connect with yourself with compassion. So we talk a lot about self-compassion as a core skill, a quality to because it allows us to, it really allows us to befriend our feelings, allows us to make better choices, allows us to know what's good for us. It's a really important skill. And so when you're feeling, many people when they're feeling intense feelings, they don't like their feelings. They don't want to feel that way. They're afraid of their feelings. They think they're wrong in some way. And so connecting to yourself in that feeling with compassion, knowing that it's okay that you're feeling whatever you're feeling, and that you're okay, that you're lovable no matter what you're feeling.
Well, and sometimes people have been told from the time they were little that their feelings weren't okay. So sometimes it's just getting that permission that whatever you feel is okay. I tell people, whatever you feel is fine. It's what you do in response to those feelings that may or may not be helpful.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So after you've stepped back into yourself and connected to yourself with compassion, the O step in SCORE is open up and observe and basically get curious. Just notice, what am I feeling? What was it that triggered the feeling? Am I telling stories about the other person's motivation or about what this means? And just really learning more about the feeling. When she said that, you know, that made me really sad because it made me think, you know, that meant that we wouldn't ever be able to be together, or, you know, whatever it is, whatever story is coming up, and being able to separate out the story from the emotion. So be with the emotion in yourself, like in this case the sadness, without continually re-stimulating the emotion over and over and over again by telling the story about it.
Right, and that's a very powerful tool or skill to be able to do that.
Yes. And it's huge. It takes practice. So many of us are used to just assuming that our stories about reality are reality. So it's a subtle skill. You know, I think for anybody listening to this program, if they've already done a fair amount of mindfulness work, they'll totally get it. But if they haven't, and it's new to them, you know, it might be kind of like, well, how do I do that? You know, what I felt and what I thought about it are the same thing. And so it really is something that somebody has to learn how to do, how to distinguish their emotions. And we often teach the model that Gay and Katie Hendricks developed about emotions, which is basically that there's only three actual emotions that cause us trouble in relationships, and those are sadness, fear, and anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people will say, oh, I felt abandoned, or I felt disrespected, or, you know, these other things. Those aren't emotions. Those are actually stories.
Right. And it's amazing how when we change our stories, everything else can change. But it's like I tell you, know, but unfortunately, we have to change our own stories. And what a lot of people are trying to do is change other people's stories.
Yeah, right.
And I tell people, I said, no. I said, you know, when they come in and they say, well, that's not how it went down. And it's like, unless you have a video camera or a tape recorder where you can capture the exact stuff, you're going to be arguing about this. And I always say, have you ever been able to change anybody else's perception? And they look at me and they say no. And I said, well, then stop trying. The only person's perception you can change is your own. which this is a really good way to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the R?
Yeah, the R is to remember your responsibility, that you are responsible for your own feelings, that someone else or something else triggered it, but those feelings are yours.
Mm-hmm.
That you need to really take ownership of them. And then the other, which is to relinquish responsibility for other people's feelings. Oftentimes, I know for me, mm-hmm. it's like if I said something or something happened and someone felt something, I would be, oh, that was my fault, or I did that, mm-hmm. right? But we have to relinquish responsibility for other people's feelings.
And sometimes that's, you know, sometimes that's even relinquishing responsibility for positive feelings, because I get a lot of people in my office, and it's, you know, who literally tell me that their job is to make their partner happy. And yeah. I just look at them, I said, you will fail because you can't do that.
Right, right. Yeah.
And they look, yeah, it's like, so I tell people you can add or detract to somebody's choice of whether they're going to be happy, but you can't determine whether or not they're going to be happy.
Yep, mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We have the same conversation with our students and clients frequently, because mm-hmm. there is so much confusion in our culture about these things. People really are taught that, you know, as one of our students pointed out in our last workshop, she said, you know, since I was a little kid, people were saying, you know, you made your brother mad, you know, mm-hmm. you hurt me, you know, this and that. And so people have really learned to take responsibility for each other's feelings and to blame each other for their own feelings.
Right. Right.
Really big piece of education here and retraining.
So what's the E?
So the E is that now, once you've gone through that process and really, really processed all of the emotions that were going on inside, you've observed them, you've connected yourself with compassion, you take responsibility or relinquish responsibility, you are empowered to make a different choice. You're empowered to do something different with that feeling than you have in the past.
And so the E stands for making an empowered communication choice. And the
right, which is, as you said earlier, it's absolutely liberating. It's a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
But when you realize you're in charge of how you want to be, wow.
By that time, you're also empowered because you have untriggered yourself and you've undone the amygdala hijack, and your prefrontal cortex, your smart, wise mind, is back online and can speak skillfully.
Well, that's so fantastic. This is Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and today I'm addressing how you can keep conflict from destroying your relationship with my guests, Dr. Ruth Schwartz and Dr. Michelle Moraine. I got to iron my tongue. And if fighting and harsh words and trouble in communicating is part of your relationship story, then I invite you to step back, take a moment, shoot me an email, or give me a phone call, and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After Marriage strategy session. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at Foundations Coaching NC, that's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, Coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie, .com, or you can reach me at 919-924-0463, because, guys, you don't have to keep fighting. You can do something about it. And so back to the conversation on how to do this. And one of the things that we've talked about a little bit, and I really think is crucial because it really matters to the stories that we tell, is this role is this role of blame.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, you know, I don't do guilt, I don't do blame. They're based in the past. We can't do anything about what's gone on in the past. I talk about ownership and responsibility, that, you know, how do I take ownership? And this is a little bit what you guys were talking about earlier, about either blaming somebody else or on some level taking somebody else's mm-hmm. blame. So how do people work through this?
Well, I think what's important about this is that I love what you said about ownership and responsibility, because we are responsible for our words and we are responsible for our actions. And I think And that, in a way, that that we have a lot of power, and that we really can shape what we say and what we do. But no one is to blame for anything, right? There's nothing. There's really nothing to point a finger at. Certainly, nobody's to blame for feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Brains are responsible for creating those feelings, and we don't have any control over them. And so, we talk a lot about, it's about back to responsibility for our feelings.
And sometimes people make mistakes. And in an atmosphere of compassion and self-compassion, then somebody can become able to acknowledge and own their own mistakes. And that doesn't have to be self-blame. And, of course, it's very hard for somebody to acknowledge and own whatever mistakes they may have made if their partner is busy blaming them.
Right.
So we're not saying that everything that ever happens is okay or that nobody ever does anything wrong, but that in an atmosphere of self-responsibility and compassion and using these kinds of communication skills, there's not really ever any need for blame or self-blame, and it's never helpful or constructive.
Well, something you just said triggered something for me, because I tell, my position is that the three hardest words to say in the English language are not "I love you," but "I am sorry." And this idea that we can make mistakes and have that be okay, and I run into a lot of people who have been, who are basically perfectionists, who basically feel like I'm a bad person if I make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help people get through that? Because that's a story.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, first of all, it takes a lot of compassion. It's like, wow, that is so painful to be walking around with that belief, that conviction, because the truth is not a day goes by where we each don't make a mistake or more than one mistake.
Mm-hmm.
If you have that belief that making a mistake makes you a bad person, you're going to inevitably think you're a bad person all the time. Either that or you're going to have to be in denial all the time.
Right.
I just don't make mistakes. It's your fault. I didn't do it. You did it because I can't make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about cultivating self-compassion and self-love. And it's one of the first things that we teach in many of our courses. We actually have a whole course on it. Because when you can really have compassion for yourself, know that you're a human being, that you're going to make mistakes, and that it's okay that you make mistakes, life is going to be a lot happier, a lot easier.
And I think, as you said, so many people find it so hard to get the words out that say, "I'm sorry." And even beyond saying, "I'm sorry," I think what's even more constructive is to just be able to acknowledge, like, "Oh, yeah, you did ask me to get that at the store, and I totally spaced it out,"
Mm-hmm.
And then you could say, "I'm sorry," or not, or, "Next time would you text it to me," or "Next time I'll make sure to look at my phone when I'm at the store," or, whatever it is. Because then the other person feels heard. If you did forget something, or you did do something in a way that they asked you not to do, or, whatever may have happened, just that simple acknowledgement can go so far in diffusing the charge.
Well, and as you're talking, I'm thinking about a conversation that my husband witnessed, where I was semi a part of, where a young man had come in to the break room, and there were only men in the break room for some weird reason. I'm not quite sure why. And, he was all upset. He was recently married, and he just had his first big fight with his wife, and he was "but I was right." And apparently in unison, all the men said, "But it doesn't matter."
Uh-huh.
So how do we, so there is this idea that, and I think this may be part of acknowledging, saying "I'm sorry" or acknowledging a mistake, because then some people equate that with that they were wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they're right. And it's like, I try to tell people, well, yes, and you both, what happens if you're both right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the idea that I was right is a story.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you were wrong is a story. And
mm-hmm.
Our brains evolved to selectively, constantly filter information. There's always
thousands of things going on that we're not perceiving. It is way too much for us to possibly perceive. And so whenever you're telling a story that says I'm right or a story that says you're wrong, it's because you're selectively filtering information to make a certain kind of case inside yourself.
Right.
It's almost never 100% accurate.
Well, yeah, because I keep telling people, unless you're talking about 2 plus 2 equaling 4, and I think with new math, sometimes they can get it to equal 5. I don't know. But, you know, unless you're talking about something like that, then we're talking about opinion and or perception, and that isn't really a right or wrong kind of thing.
Right, right. And so it might be accurate that your partner forgot to get the things at the store that you asked them to get, but that doesn't mean it's accurate that, you know, they never do what it is that you ask them to do, or mm-hmm. clearly they don't respect you, or they don't care about you, or, mm-hmm. you know, that's where the stories come in, and that's where the blame comes in.
Right, and that's where the damage comes in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this method sounds pretty straightforward, and you know, in I can see where there are challenges for a lot of people, but what have you guys found that gets in most people's way of adopting the SCORE method?
I think one thing that happens a lot is that it takes some practice sometimes for people to really be able to notice when they're triggered and stop.
Mm-hmm.
That they're sort of, you know, the cows are out of the barn and, you know, down on the field before they realize the doors are open. That's something that happens a lot. And so sort of part of the practice is really just to people to get in touch with when they're triggered, and just so they can say, oh, wow, yes, I'm triggered now.
That's one of the first things I try to tell people. I use a 1 to 10 scale.
Uh-huh.
And I say, okay, rate yourself, and just practice this. Just random times during the day, just stop and rate yourself on a 1 to 10 scale of where are you emotionally, with 1 being everything's calm and peaceful, everything's great, to 10, somebody's going out the second story window and I don't know who it is.
Uh-huh.
You know,
right.
That's a great practice to
have people just get used to monitoring themselves in that way.
Right. And also, there, you know, I found that people tend to have a physiological response when they get triggered, whether it's a knot in their stomach, or they feel, you know, they breathe fast, or they feel flushed. And that's usually, okay, get really in touch with who you are and how you respond,
yes,
so that you can, you be able to catch yourself and go into your first step.
Exactly.
We are so much on the same page about all of this, Leslie. It's really lovely.
Okay. Now the only question is how do we get this training out there, which really is important. So where can people find your information? Because you said you do workshops, and I know you have some other things. So where can people actually take a look at this, read through the SCORE method, figure out other ways in which, because I think I agree with you that when we can control ourselves, when we can manage ourselves, that's when we're able to be part of healthy relationships.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And our work is targeted specifically for lesbians and queer women. Now, mm-hmm. of course, the tools that we've been talking about apply to couples of all sexual orientations and genders, mm-hmm. but because we found that there was really nobody teaching this in the lesbian community, that's mm-hmm. why we founded our organization, which is called Conscious Girlfriend. And it's mm-hmm. at consciousgirlfriend.com on the web. We also have a book which is available on Amazon called Conscious Lesbian Dating and Love, a guide to finding the right partner and creating the relationship of your dreams.
Love it.
And for any of your listeners who are heterosexual or gay men, but who are open to learning, you know, hearing work presented from a lesbian perspective, we welcome them to get the book as well. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times lesbians end up reading heterosexual books and making the translation, so, you know.
Right. So we could
go the other way around, too.
We could do it the other way. Yeah, I think it's really important because, yes, we are always going to disagree with our partners from time to time, hopefully not all the time. But as you've heard today, these disagreements don't have to escalate and cause real damage to your relationship. And the cool thing is, and hopefully you heard this, is that the power to reduce this conflict is in your hands. You don't have to wait for your partner to jump on board. You have all the ability yourself. So the question becomes, what will it take for you to take charge of yourself and of your relationship? Hopefully one of those ways is to keep listening to the show and getting more valuable information. And so until next time, stay loving.